Once again, we are gathered for the truth about markets. Every single week, people listen to this show and they understand that understanding the truth about markets is a way to understand what's happening in the world around us. Corporations defer to the markets. Corporations defer to the markets. Individuals are now deferring to the markets. The fastest growing major of any academic pursuit in the colleges and universities around the world is now economics and markets. Stacey Herbert, here we are in Paris. We came over here to celebrate with the Parisians for the successful bid for the 2012 Olympic Games. Of course, that didn't work out too good for us.
No. It was a disaster.
And now here we are in Paris, and due to circumstances beyond our control, we are forced to tape this show. So people in London who hear this show, actually, it's going to be pre-recorded. It's a couple of days before these words are meeting your ears. They were actually pre-recorded in Paris, France.
Because the London Underground is shut down.
Yeah, the energy, transportation grid is coming under shutdown due to the fact that on Liverpool Street Station, just a half hour ago, okay, it was big bombs. Buses blowing up. Dead people everywhere. I see dead people. Now, of course, it's a tragedy. And, let's look at the roots of the tragedy. Because I believe that the roots of this tragedy are not ideological. They're market-based. People are going to say it's ideological-based. That people in countries far away hate us. Hate our way of living. They don't respect life. And I believe that's just a lot of nonsense. I believe that there's a lot of incentive for the government and corporations who work together to create the circumstances that eventually lead to these types of events, because it's a great way for them to make money. It's market-based. It's profiteering. It's war profiteering. The fact that these buses blew up and these people are now dead, tragic as it may be, it is part of an overall need for corporations to monetize dead people. Let me give you a good example of this. Okay, here we are in Paris. This is the Truth About Markets. My name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. And I'm looking at the Guardian newspaper. And whose photo do I see but Lee Raymon?
Who's that?
Heads up Exxon. Exxon Mobil, the biggest corporation in the world. War profiteer in the world.
I've heard of them.
Now, let's contrast the words of Lee Raymon. Okay. And let's keep in mind that the tragic events in Liverpool Street just an hour ago are the result not of an ideological clash, but as a land grab opportunities that have presented themselves over the past few decades from greedy corporations in bed with the government to shrink the public domain until the point where those who are on the reservations that are left, you know, the places where people are allowed to congregate and meet, the reservations. You remember the Indians in America got pushed off, got into reservations, have resulted in this pushback. And now Live 8 and Bob Geldof and Bono up there in Glen Eagles, I think they've done a disservice by sugarcoating the problem. They seem to believe that, with a little tweaking here and there, that suddenly the world's economies are going to achieve equilibrium. Africans are going to get a fair shake. And these types of events aren't going to occur. That's not right. Because, as we've said on the show last week, Geldof and Bono are promoting a model that is the perpetuation of the status quo. They're actually got the 200,000 people in Hyde Park as part of the concert endorsing a model that is actually the last thing in the world Africa needs to survive. It's a model that encourages road building and climate change and global warming per the corporations that are given carte blanche to go into Africa. And perpetuate their model of doing business, you know, which we call sometimes a neoliberal model, but it's just the capitalist model, unfettered capitalism, unchecked capitalism, you could say, instead of neoliberalism. If you don't like neoliberalism, neoliberalism as a term is basically jargon. Ed, here at Resonance Radio FM, has accurately pointed out that we use this piece of jargon and we don't really explain what it is. So we're getting rid of it. Neoliberalism. We're not going to use it anymore.
You're not going to tell anybody what it meant?
Well, it's just jargon. You know, you try to explain jargon, you end up creating more jargon. Mm-hmm. Jargon breeds more jargon. You know, I mean, you could say that the neoliberal model is the attempt by private corporations to liberate the public domain from public ownership and put it on the balance sheet of private corporations, basically. It's a tension that exists between the public and the private. And this tension has been going on since man first started setting up farming 16,000 years ago, 14,000 years ago. This is what created a surplus of food because of the domestication of animals and the agriculture trends of the transition from hunter-gatherer to agriculture. And this created surplus. Surplus created a need to deal with the surplus. So then economics was born. The beginning of it, anyway. But anyway, the problem is that in order to have an economic environment, you need some kind of balancing. Even Adam Smith said in his classic treatise on the subject, Wealth of Nations, you need both government regulation and free marketing, free marketeers. You need those two. They have to be in balance. As he said, if you put two businessmen in a room, you'll get price fixing. That'll be the result. And he said that's why the government's got to be in there, striking a balance between regulation and free enterprise. The problem is that corporations have now co-opted government, and there is no regulatory authorities worth the name. And so there is no balance in the markets. Capital is flowing into the rich pockets. It's disenfranchising the poor. The poor are getting poorer. And Africa is a good example. I mean, Africa's poor in two ways, economically and ecologically. Africa is the unfortunate recipient of this model, this capitalist model, this corporate agenda model that we used to call the neoliberal model on this show. But thanks to Ed, we now call it the, the thing is, if you call it the capitalist model, then you get accused of being anti-capitalist, which are not anti-capitalist either.
And but that's become jargon anyway as well.
The private agenda model, the private capital model, the greedy model. How about that? The greedy model. The greedy model versus the altruistic model. Those two are always fighting for domination, dominion in the economy. So the Africans are suffering two ways, economically and ecologically. They're probably suffering more ecologically than they are economically. And this is something that Geldof and Bono don't take into on board. As a matter of fact, Geldof said, you can't mention global warming at the Live Aid show. Even though global warming and climate change is the single greatest contributor to economic imbalances in Africa. So he's refusing to accept the single greatest contributor to their economic imbalance, that is their ecological problem. Because to tie the ecology to economy requires to have some finesse with and some familiarity with finance and economics, which Bob Geldof doesn't have. Bono kind of has, but he also is a big shareholder of a new equity partnership called Elevation Partners. So he's clearly conflicted. He's a conflicted, good guy.
A plutocrat.
He's a conflicted plutocrat.
Did you say Geldof was just nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize?
Okay. Well, yeah, why? Because he was successfully able to clear the way for the corporations who are already causing climate change and ecological dislocation in Africa to continue doing so without any public pushback. You get the public to sign on to African genocide by corporations. Genocide by Africans by corporations. Thanks, Bob Geldof. Sir Bob. Yep. You deserve your Nobel Peace Prize because you're getting a piece of the action. That's what they should call it, the Nobel Peace of the Action Prize. Because he's getting a big raise in play, a big raise in pay. 10 apps communication, stock's going to go higher, according to Bob, because altruism is worth more. The Nobel Committee giving him the Peace of the Action Prize. All right, Bob, you're going to make it into the rich list next year. They come out with the Times of London, the biggest rich people in Britain. It's going to have Bob Geldof. You made it, buddy. Doesn't matter how many Africans you help starve. Doesn't matter how many Africans are going to suffer ecological devastation. You made it to that list. Good going, Bob. Peace of the Action Nobel Prize. Oh, boy. So anyway, if you read The Guardian, Karis, you got this guy, Lee Raymond. And let me remind our listeners that we recorded this show on Thursday in Paris, shortly after hearing about the bombs blowing up on Liverpool Street Station. This show, we're critical of governments, we're critical of corporations, and we believe that the source of this violence lies not in a clash of ideologies, but in economic deprivation perpetrated by these corporations and these governments. And this is not an unpredictable event. If you steal somebody's livelihood and steal their ecology, they're going to fight back. Now, these people who are doing the fighting and the who are creating the violence are not going to come out and say they're fighting for the environment. Okay, they're not ecologists. They're not the Earth Liberation Front. They're not the Animal Liberation Front. But they are nevertheless put into a state of disparity, of dismay, due to the same forces, economically and ecologically speaking, that have created those other groups like ELF and ALF. Those are not the problem. Those are the symptoms. This is a symptom of a problem, okay? These events, Liverpool Street Station, are symptomatic of a bigger problem. The problem, these explosions are not the problem. These are symptoms of a bigger problem. The problem is you've got very small cadre of plutocrats draining the world's ecology and economy for themselves, tilting the balance of risk and reward in ways that are causing severe violence. Now, this violence that happened at Liverpool Street Station is being mirrored in the rainforest. It's being mirrored on the coral reefs. It's being mirrored in the atmosphere. The ecology is being extremely abused violently by the same forces. So it doesn't surprise me then that the human being, which is part of the overall ecology of the world in which we live, is going to be pushed to the point of some kind of pushback that is not something that is going to help sell tickets to a Disney movie. It's not going to help get people to go buy a Starbucks. It's not going to help people buy a McDonald's hamburger. It's not going to get people to buy Nike's sneakers. Okay, they're not in it. There are things beyond the control of corporations. There are things beyond the control of governments. When you create an imbalance in the ecology and the economy so severe as what's happened in the last 20 or 30 years, thanks to Lee Raymond and Exxon principally, bad stuff happens. Okay? The ecology is breaking down and society is breaking down. Okay? When the ecology breaks down, there's hurricanes in Florida, kills people. When society breaks down, there are tragic events. People get blown up. But they have at their root cause something that's very similar, which is that you've got a few people in the government and in corporate America in the UK who are draining the capital and life from the world economies for their own greedy good at the expense of the many. Okay, this is the truth about markets. This is the reality. Now, we have no further to go than to look at this article in the Guardian newspaper in Lee Raymond. Now, listen to what Lee Raymond has to say. Lee Raymond, if he's not taking hallucinogenic drugs on a regular basis, then either he has to take them, start taking them. If he is taking them, he needs to either take less or take more. But his relationship with reality is severely skewed to the point of psycho. He's a psycho. He's a psychopathology. The guy is a dyed-in-the-wood, cold-to-the-bone nutcase. Now, ExxonMobil has dismissed solar and wind energy as, quote, inconsequential, and urges of politicians to concentrate on sources that would continue to provide 99% of future energy needs. Okay, Lee Raymond. He's saying that energy, such as wind energy and solar, is inconsequential. Well, yeah, Lee, you know, if you don't support it and you're a $400 billion company and none of the governments around the world support it, it can become inconsequential. What it needs is support from environmental terrorists. You need to convert. You need to convert from being a guy working against society, a guy who's working against the ecology, a guy who's working against the public domain, a guy who stops trying to co-opt government to work against the public domain and to work against the ecology, to somebody who's actually humanist, somebody who's actually pro-humanity, someone who's trying to stop premature extinction of the human race, someone who's trying to work against events like we've seen at the Liverpool Street Station. I'm not hearing anything in this article from Lee Raymond, and we're going to talk about this, that tells me that he's against what happened in Liverpool Street Station by his actions. He may say cosmetically, oh, you know, those guys are bad, but his actions say that he is supportive of wholesale violence against nature, wholesale societal violence through economic imbalances. And then when the symptoms appear, like we see at Liverpool Street Station, then he goes off the rails and says that this is an excuse for us to dismiss solar energy and wind power some more. because we need to get richer because we need to buy more defense contractors. We need to buy more bombs. We need to build higher walls. So their solution to the symptoms are to create worse conditions. So he's actually inflaming the problem. There's probably nobody in the world today that inflames more problems than this guy, Lee Raymond, and his company, Exxon, without any doubt. Saddam is a pussycat compared to this guy. I mean, who in history has contributed to more deaths than Lee Raymond and Exxon? I mean, Attila the Hun? No. Not really. This guy, he's the ultimate bad guy. You know, that's the truth about markets. He goes on to say, Lee Raymond, the chairman and chief executive, also argues that areas such as the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska should be open to compulsory and exploratory drilling. Oh, thanks, Lee. That's nice. We're going to take Alaska down now so you can make your yacht payment, so you can bribe more public officials to create more economic global imbalances in the economy, that create more disgruntled people, so you create the conditions for more violence like we see at Liverpool Street Station. You got to work through, you know, the hip bone's connected to that, this bone to that bone is all connected. If you know the truth about markets, you'll see why this guy ultimately has put your life and the loss of your life as an economic gain for his company. If you go to spread bets, like Cantor Fitzgerald spread betting, you check a spread bet against British life, Lee Raymond would be taking that bet. That's how contemptuous he is of your life in Britain. He's betting that you're going to get blown up because it's going to help his company, Exxon, who's in bed with the defense contractors, who's in bed with the security industry, who's going to be perpetuating this fear model. Yeah, but, you know, according to Bob Geldof, you can't talk about global warming. Can't talk about Exxon, can you, Stacey Herbert? You're not getting much into it. You're not saying much on this show.
Well, it's a pretty deep discussion over there. Actually, I was just thinking, speaking of Lee Raymond and the terrorist bombs in London, Bush has just arrived in London. And didn't he say last week to Fort Bragg soldiers that we don't want the reason why America is in Iraq is because we don't want terrorists to come to our country. We're going to take the fight to other countries. And sure enough, as soon as he arrives in Britain, what happens? Terrorist attacks. He warned Britain. He said, wherever I go, there will be terrorist attacks because I'm bringing those terrorist attacks there rather than to America.
Well, this gets back to our theory about the bees.
Exactly.
Bush, Brown, Blair, Bin Laden, Bono, Bob Geldof. They're all in the same boat together. They're all working for the same side. They all stand to benefit economically from these events.
Well, exactly. They're a duopoly. And, you know, the telling thing is people there, you don't realize that the breaking news here online, it was confused. They weren't sure if it was the PFI contracts that went horribly wrong or Bin Laden.
Right.
So it's like the same thing. You're just as likely to die of either of them.
That's the excellent point. In other words, the first report was that the rail system was breaking down. There was an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Because the UK rail system, the British rail system, is vulnerable to this type of thing because it keeps breaking down because the PFI contracts have been a way to give private contractors all the money and leave the public domain with all the risk. And there's been a huge transference of wealth from taxpayers' pockets to private contractors' pockets. And this has left the UK horribly vulnerable. So the first instinct when this thing happened was, oh, well, it's probably an energy surge and a blow up because the rail system is so poorly built, poorly managed, that would be a natural conclusion. But then, no, it's not that. It's the bad guys who blew some stuff up. Well, they're also onto the same scam, aren't they? It's a duopoly between the banks and the Bin Ladens of the world. There's no separation at this point. They're both speculating in the world's commodity markets. They're speculating in such a way as human life is something that is expendable. It's just completely and utterly expendable. This Dr. Strangelove, you know, writ large, you know, between UK, Britain, you know, playing the role of the psychotic warmongering pro-death ray machines, you know, because they have shares in the death ray machines.
But this is what you always say. You always say the markets never lie. What's happened in the last 2 weeks on the options markets, the futures market and oil? Skyrocketed.
That's right.
They knew. How much do you want to make a bet? This is just breaking news now, but I bet you anything, oil is going to 70 at least.
Okay, you know, Stacey Herbert, I'm glad you have a good memory. Just 3 days ago on our show in Paris, I was talking about that there's a huge surge in options contracts on oil.
Yes.
And at that time, I said that this is a clear conflict of interest because those in the position to get paid on these put options that these call options that were being placed to positive bets that oil would go higher are the same people who are in a position to make that oil go higher, namely this duopoly between Bush, Blair, and bin Laden. Now, here we are 3 days later, and it was very unusual because the trading in the options on the oil futures, there was a big story in the Financial Times. They said, wow, there's a lot of people speculating that oil is going to go to $80 a barrel. Huh, I wonder why. Now, 3 days later, we find out why. The oligopoly, Bush, Blair, bin Laden, they're speculating on this. They're making tons of money. Those people dead in the street right now made these people money. And that's the unfortunate problem when you put the corporation in charge of the government. The government can effectively make things happen for their private constituency that are going to line their pockets with lots of money, including staging an event like this at Liverpool Street Station. It's a totally staged event. The options went on first. This event happened as part of the staging of this. Now everyone's making tons of money because, of course, oil is going to spike on this news. And it's clearly a conflict of interest when corporations and governments are in bed with each other in these PFI contracts, PPP contracts. You got private contractors instead of soldiers in Iraq. This is a wholesale economic rape done. And the people lying on the street dead, that was already factored into the equation. Their lives were worth a lot of money to the people speculating on the higher oil price. That's the truth about markets. Now, we saw it before 9/11. There was a huge upsurge in the puts. They were taking the opposite side of the trade on airlines and oil stocks. Sure enough, a lot of people made money. Allegedly, this guy, Buzzy Krongard, in the United States, allegedly was speculating with these put options. He was working at an investment bank, then went over to the CIA. $2 million in trading profits were unclaimed after that event. Now, here we have it once again. Speculation in the financial markets based on the profit potential of staging these events. And we saw it clearly. 3 days ago, the Financial Times, if you had read the Financial Times, you would have noticed that there's huge surge in options purchases for oil going $80 a barrel, would have telegraphed this event. Now it has happened. Now the profits are going to be made. And, you know, I wrote about this actually in the Ecologist magazine a few months ago. I said, based on, you know, you look at the financial markets and it could make a case that Las Vegas could be a big hit because of all the trading in Las Vegas. And you look at the markets, look at the way the trading patterns are emerging, and you can get an idea of where these things are going to happen next.
I think that's amazing. People should look it up. Call the Financial Times, order the Monday, July 4th issue. You'll see there's an article about this freak speculation in the oil market that didn't make sense to the honest guys down there at the Financial Times, which won the best paper in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys didn't understand it. Max Kaiser, however, you did.
I picked up on it.
You did.
Unfortunately, I'm kind of spooky that way.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the markets because I've been looking at it for 20 years.
I'm spooked.
Lee Raymond, okay, getting back to the biggest murdering criminal in the world, Lee Raymond out of ExxonMobil. He's trying to get rid of Alaska because he might find a drop of oil underneath there. So he's willing to commit genocide against the Inuits. He's willing to kill all the polar bears. He's willing to get rid of all the natural beauty. Of course, who places value on beauty? I don't see beauty listed on the New York Stock Exchange. There might be a drop of oil under Alaska, so let's get rid of it. Yeah, good idea, Lee. You're going to get a Nobel Peace of the Action Prize, too, right along there with Bob Geldof. His comments in Exxon's House magazine, The Lamp. He should be hitting the head with a lamp. Knock some sense into this guy. Could be indicative of White House thinking. Gee, do you think? It might be indicative of White House thinking, as if there's a difference between the White House and Exxon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he says improvements in U.S. air and water quality are being buried beneath ideological agendas or inflamed rhetoric. See, here he's playing the crusade card. He's trying to conflate those against Lee Raymond making money with those who support Islam. In his mind, he's saying, if you don't think me making money is a good idea, you must be Muslim. And they've already set up the situation where Muslims are bad people like the Indians back in America when they push them off the reservation, put them into little camps, and the wholesale slaughter of those people. There's another wholesale slaughter going on in the middle class in America with the eminent domain.
Eminent domain.
Well, eminent domain, which we're going to get to shortly. As soon as I finish with this Lee Raymond article. But anyway, ideological agendas. Yeah, right. So you're just playing the whole the media fake crusade game there. Thanks, Raymond. Now that's inflaming racism. So he wants everyone to go out and kill black people and anyone who's not white. Of course, mm-hmm. Lee Raymond is white.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Raymond has infuriated green groups and will worry G8 leaders, encouraging George Bush to do more to fight global warming. Okay, this is a good cop, bad cop. So George Bush will tell G8, I really want, to help global warming, but Lee Raymond, he's our biggest customer. He's a big industrialist. I don't want to piss him off. No. And Lee Raymond goes, I'm the bad cop, and, either do it my way or hit the highway. So these guys are just all staging bullshit nonsense there. They're in it together, and they're just, it's a big circle jerk. Exxon is seen as a significant influence on presidential energy policies. Duh! They wrote the policies.
Yeah.
But, of course, we can't find that out for certain, the Dick Cheney energy policies, because the U.S. doesn't disclose this stuff. But at the same time, the U.S. claims to be a transparent, democratic society. Yeah, right, except for stuff that matters in fighting the global imbalances of wealth that lead to events like Liverpool Street Station blowing up. Okay, when that stuff's involved, we can't be transparent because it's of commercial interest to Exxon. And that commercial interest takes precedence over your life, dead person in the street. Thanks, because we just monetized your death thousands of times over in the options market in the oil futures pit. Ha ha! Sucker. He said there are many alternative forms of energy that people talk about that may be interesting, but they are not consequential on the scale that will be needed, and they may never have a significant impact on the energy balance. What does this mean? It means that if anyone tries to actually promote solar energy or wind energy, Lee Raymond is going to hire Bin Laden, his buddy, in the duopoly to come kill you. That if people on the bus, were they supporting wind and solar? Is that why Lee Raymond had to send over his bombers?
It is a bit ecological to be taking the bus rather than driving your car.
Yeah, they were driving a bus. They're performing economic sabotage, according to Charles Clark. They're economic saboteurs. They were taking a bus. They weren't driving a car to help the GDP boost. Lee Raymond wasn't getting a payday. Those people are economic saboteurs. Let's get Bin Laden, our buddy, our henchman, our muscle, to go take him out. As if Bin Laden doesn't do the bidding of these guys. I think it's fascinating that people don't understand that Bin Laden is just a muscle. He's just a muscle for these guys. Oh, my God. What else does he say? To the extent that people do focus, what's this saying? To the extent that people focus too much on that, for example, on solar or wind, even though they are not economic. Okay, here he's using the word economic. As if he alone has a monopoly on the word economic. I don't know if people in the UK realize that words are now up for grabs to be sold on the global word market. China, in order to take on Microsoft's products, they agreed with the Chinese that the Chinese could expunge the words freedom and democracy from the Microsoft products sold in China. So Bill Gates, on his own behalf, sold the words freedom and democracy. Okay? Oh, I guess those were part of the American public domain, but I guess not. I guess Bill Gates owns them because he's the richest American. Might equals right. Because he's rich, he's right. Possession is 9/10 of the law. He owns those words. He sells them to the Chinese. Now you've got Lee Raymond. Apparently, he owns the word economic. He decides what's economic and what's not economic, according to him. Of course, it would be economic if the government was behind solar and behind wind in a way that would make it economic. Lee Raymond's stock would go down, which it should because he's an environmental terrorist. But it's not because he owns the word economic. And what they're doing is diverting attention from the real issues. Yeah, right. The real issues are that you're an environmental terrorist. If you got a problem with that, come down here to the studio and take me on mano a mano. He argues that even if alternative energy had double-digit growth rates, they would only supply 1% of the world's energy needs in 25 years' time. Yeah, well, here he's just obfuscating the issue some more with some gobbledygook doublespeak. Yeah, okay, well, if the government, the people working for the people, were to take on these energies, they could be viable in 6 months. But that's not the interest of the government, because the government's in, working for Lee Raymond. People dead in the street. Thanks, Lee. You're getting a Nobel Peace of the Action Prize for that. Well, you should get a Nobel Prize, Lee Raymond. He's killed more people. What else is he going to say here? Is he any more interested in staying focused in the 99%? I got that. How'd that come from? I am more interested in staying focused on the 99%. Yeah. He's more interested in staying focused on ways he can make money and his shareholders.
That 99%, that's his piece of the action. Yeah. That's his piece of the Nobel Prize.
He wants to focus on his 99% that he owns, the 1% that holds out some hope. He's not interested in that.
That's the public domain.
Yeah, you know, according to this guy, Jesus was died for to drive an SUV. He's got Jesus, you know, pumping gas.
I saw that bumper sticker.
Lee Raymond. Lee Raymond said he was not saying that the U.S. energy supply was at risk if exploration did not take place in Alaska. I don't think we have a basis to say that. However, willful and deliberate ignorance about the country's energy base is also not a wise approach. So again, he's saying either you let us drill in Alaska or we're going to send Bin Laden to kill you, like we did those people on the bus. Either you become an energy whore, support my stock, or we're getting Bin Laden to kill you. Thanks, Link. The U.S. Geological Survey suggested there may be the equivalent of several billion barrels of oil beneath Alaska, and this would have an important consequences on the breeding grounds for the caribou. Yeah, well, like Lee cares about the caribou. He's already doesn't care about the Inuits, the polar bears, the forest, the trees, the beauty. Does caribou, do they trade on the stock exchange? I don't see caribou listed. Did the caribou have their own currency? Do the caribou buy Exxon stock? Let's kill them. Put them on the bus, get Bin Laden to kill them. It's a busload full of caribou. Buses load of caribou, gonna be blown up by Exxon. Thanks, Lee. What else is it? Critics said such a relatively small amount of hydrocarbons was reason enough for oil firms to be kept out. Well, not for Lee. If there's even one drop of oil underneath Alaska, he's going to go kill everybody. Mr. Raymond said that's a flawed argument because there are not many exploration projects anywhere in the world that we would pursue if this was predicated on that standard. Oh, so in other words, it doesn't matter. He doesn't look at the science. He doesn't look at the reality. If there's a suggestion of a drop of oil, it could be in your mother's beehole. He would be there with a stick of dynamite, Lee Raymond. If you told him, he said, hey, Lee, I think my mom just swallowed a glass of oil, he'd hack her open with a machete and take the oil out before she had a chance to digest it. That's his approach. Thanks, Lee. What else does he say? Okay. Then the article finishes off with a quote, of course, in the last dying seconds of this article. And as we learn why people are getting busloads of people who refuse to drive SUVs are getting blown up at the behest of Lee, we get a quote from Friends of the Earth who say, Lee's refusal to accept the need for renewables is consistent with an inability to accept climate change is happening. Oh, yeah, thanks, Friends of the Earth. Yeah, okay, yeah, oh, yeah. That sounds threatening. Yeah. They got a lot of juice, don't they, Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, TAC, Oxfam. They got these corporations on the run. Woo-ha! They're running scared because Friends of the Earth says that their logic is inconsistent with reality. That's got to hurt. How are they going to take it? Oh, I can see Lee just crippling over in pain. Don't say that. I can't take it. The problem is that these NGOs like Friends of the Earth don't understand economics. Let me give you an example of that, Stacey Herbert.
Give it to me. Go ahead. Come on.
Okay.
I want to hear.
Well, here we are in Germany. No, we're not in Germany.
I was confused seriously for a moment.
We are pre-recording, actually, this show this week because of these bombings. You know, we can't get public transportation. We're stuck in Paris.
Apparently, it's according to the news, it's the first time that London Underground has ever been completely shut down.
Not really? They shut the whole thing down?
And all the buses.
Well, they got to shut down. They should start doing the repairs. Now that it's all shut down. All the repairs that these PPI initiatives have, the problems they created. The PPPP, public-private partnership problems. course, they won't take that opportunity. What else? Coke. Okay, here we go. So Friends of the Earth. I was saying, oh, Friends of the Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, they're basically pointless because why? They refuse to really take this problem on in a way that's going to do push back in any meaningful way. And I'll give you an example of how the two different sides think differently about what's going on. Now in Germany, Coca-Cola has not sold a lot of products as they would hope to over the past 18 months because two factors. Number one, the people equate Coke with the illegal war in Iraq and they're boycotting Coke. But you don't hear much about that because the U.S. media is censored and they don't talk about anything. It's called economic sabotage to report the fact that people aren't drinking Coke because they object to the United States and Coke is a big brand for the United States. Just saying that right now, I could get an ASBO. An audio ASBO committing economic sabotage, saying that people in Germany don't drink Coke because they don't like America. The second reason is that in Germany, Coke has to comply with some ecological laws about returning bottles, the bottle return. It's got to comply with some ecology laws. It costs some money. Coke doesn't like to spend any money in the ecology. They want the public to spend the money in the ecology. They want to rape the public, steal all their money, put in keep their bottling plants in Somalia, their Coke barge off Somalia where there's no law, no government, no currency. That's what they like. That's the model they like, the Somalia Coke model. The fact that in Germany they got to pick up the tab on some of the ecological damage you're doing, they don't like that. So what are they doing? Well, Coke, they got 9 separate bottlers. So to get more political muscle, they're going to consolidate the bottlers into one big super bottler. Consolidation. When they consolidate these big bottlers into one big super bottler in Germany, they're going to get, hopefully, the political muscle they need to extricate themselves from having any ecological responsibility for their behavior over there. And they can take that money, put it right in their pockets, and everyone else can go pound sand. Why do I bring this up? I bring this up because the corporations with whom Friends of the Earth is battling, when they're pushed to the ropes, they consolidate. Whereas on the other side of the equation, Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, Oxfam, when they're pushed to the ropes, they never consolidate. Friends of the Earth, Oxfam, Friends of the Earth, they need to band together. Attack. There are thousands of NGOs all over the world. They've got an operating budget of hundreds of billions of dollars. Greenpeace alone has $100 million in the bank, sitting there doing nothing. They need to consolidate. They need to create a global NGO that taps into all their supporters, millions of supporters, hundreds of millions of dollars. They have needed a consolidated attack plan. Coca-Cola, by the way, is the single most vulnerable company to a consolidated NGO attack plan. Why? The stock is vulnerable to the no-cost weapon of choice for activists around the world, the boycott. The boycott, if properly organized by all these NGOs and a consolidated pushback against the corporate jihadist, could kill Coke stock, thus take Coke's ability away to continue as environmental terrorists. That's what these NGOs got to do. Consolidate. Fight consolidation with consolidation. Don't go to a gunfight carrying a knife. Now, as I'm saying these words, I look over to Stacy and I see tears pouring down her eyes. Something must have happened.
I'm seeing the photos of the bus just like ripped apart. And apparently there are lots dead. And Scotland Yard is having to deny reports that they were warned a few minutes ahead of time by Israel of the attacks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, how did Israel know? They're in the oligopoly.
But they were warned by the options market days ago.
Yeah, who needs Israel to tell you what's going on? Just look at the options market. You could have known 3 days ago that there was going to be an event like this. How do I know? Because I tell you, my technology for inventing this type of thing, the virtual patent, the virtual specialist patent, 5950176, U.S. patent for the virtual specialist, can predict events, help predict events based on market behavior in a virtual space. So impressed was the Pentagon with this technology that they tried to create something called the policy analysis market by Poindexter, General Poindexter, tried to rip off the Hollywood Stock Exchange, my company, with his own policy analysis market. But of course, they didn't go online with the policy analysis market because they said there was a potential for people to speculate on terrorist actions for money. Okay, now 3 days ago, there was a huge uptick in the options on oil going to $80 a barrel. In the options market, somebody was speculating on this event. You don't need the policy analysis market for people to speculate on this event. All you need is Exxon, Microsoft, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Nike, Starbucks. They're already speculating in the terrorist market. It's already happening. Now, what are they going to do about people who are upset about this? People are getting wise to the fact that they're being pushed off their land, pushed out of their homes and onto reservations and concentration camps. You know, don't forget Exxon's main goal is to turn the globe into one big Auschwitz of global warming.
Shares crash in London.
The FTSE's crashing.
Shares plummet. Leading shares plummeted on news of explosions on the London Underground.
Well, you know, we were saying this morning that the spark for a global crash, you know, this is very problematic because, and I'm thinking about my own personal portfolio at the moment, so.
It's down almost 3% already.
That's pretty bad. The stock market crash of 87 was 20% in one day. But, you know, what happens is you get the knock-on effects because so much of the trading today is computer-generated, and the computers look at models, and there's no humans that go in there with any common sense. They just look at the models, and they see the models need to certain events to take place, and the computers jump in, and this is what happened in 87. It can happen again, except 10 times worse because there's more debt.
So this could trigger computers to start.
This could trigger a global crash. I mean, you know, it could very easily because the leverage in the world, you know, there's only a certain number, hundreds of billions or trillion dollars of equity. And on top of the equity are $250 trillion of debt, according to the International Clearing Corporation, the bank that clears all the central banks and the banks. According to them, there's $250 trillion worth of debt circulating the globe. There's only, you know, $65 trillion. Actually, in global GDP. So, you know, it's like a big balloon of debt, and once you pop the balloon, there's a big event. Now, this could be the pinprick. You know, we don't markets. I guess haven't. We're doing this kind of an interesting way because the show is pre-recorded on Thursday, but we're checking out the events as they unfold live in Paris. We just did our Paris show, but drawing on my experience of 20 years in the markets. You know, this looks and sounds and smells like it could be, you know, a meltdown in the financial markets, which we've always said is ultimately a benefit to the ecology because you're taking away the wherewithal for the corporations to rape the environment. So if Exxon stock were to get cut in half or down 75%, they've got less wherewithal to go and rape Alaska. So again, you have to ask yourself, who's zooming who? Somebody obviously staged this event. Blown up the buses. They make money in the options market for a short-term gain. If it causes economic meltdown, then the ecology ultimately could be the big winner because you're depriving these companies of the wherewithal to continue their corrupt practices.
Yeah, this is another interesting thing as a result. It's saying that the market shares are crashing, but oil is nosediving because there's massive cashing out. Everybody's cashing out of oil.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking profits, they said.
Okay, so they're taking profits already in the futures market.
Strange. It's all confusing.
Well, you got to look at the, I mean, you have to look at the charts now and see over the past 2 hours how these trades have evolved.
Yeah.
So the options market on the oil contracts were put in place a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
This event has triggered, I mean, there's two possibilities. Either A, those who were banking on the market to behave in a certain way have lost their shirt, you see?
Yeah.
If the oil is crashing, you know, it could, because it could be this notion that, you know, the demand for oil would suddenly evaporate because the global economy would come to a screeching halt. So the demand for oil would evaporate. Thus, the price would deteriorate. So that's part of the underlying factors that one has to consider. The best way to play this, the whole thing, would be to put on what's called a combination, where you buy both a call and a put, mm-hmm. or a straddle, on both sides. It's expensive to do so because you're buying essentially, you're double paying for your bet. But the only, in a way it pays off is if there is a huge spike in either direction in the short term.
Oh, so you're saying these people knew. And,
well, I'm saying that's one way to do it. I mean, if you put on a straddle and there's a huge move in either direction, it pays off. So essentially, you're buying volatility is what that's called. You're buying volatility.
Okay.
It's expensive to do so. And but if you know that there's going to be an event, then and you want to cover your tracks, you know, if you don't want to be overtly buying these contracts in a way that will be easily traceable back to certain individuals. It's easier to buy a huge straddle and say it's a hedge. You see, the thing about the derivative market is that it's because all these derivatives overlap and the tail's wagging the dog of the tail wagging some other dog. It's hard to prove that anyone's trading on inside information because there's so much overlap going on. It's very difficult to untangle. Like when Warren Buffett took over that insurance company and he tried to unwind the balance sheet and he said, this is impossible. It's one big Mobius strip. There's no beginning to these derivative contracts and no end. It's just there's no there. And he came out and said, these are weapons of mass financial destruction. And this is true when you try to decipher the trading markets and figure out who's got who, how long, what they do, because they're so much overlapping, you end up with this Mobius strip effect that has no point of origin. It's just mathematical models basically trading in the global Forex market, in the global currency markets, in the bond market, in the stock market. They're all the futures market. They're all basically, so it's like a plate of spaghetti. You know, you can't tell which is where it starts, where it ends. It's almost virtually impossible to untangle. And all the financial crimes that Elliot Spitzer is working on detangling, these are crimes from 20 years ago. You know, he hasn't caught up to the crimes of the last 2 years and the last 1 year. And I'm sure that it'll take years to figure out, to untangle all the trades. There'll be a suspicion. Mm-hmm. As we're talking about it right here, we're saying based on the spike of contracts a couple of days ago, it was unusual. And people are scratching their head like, the only way this would work is if there's a sudden spike in oil price. And here you have an event. And the consequences of which were, I have to look at the charts. Was there a spike before a crash? Was there just a straight crash? Was there then straddles put on? It's not clean, of course, because the thing about these markets is that they're anonymous for them by and large. I mean, after there's an attempt to make them more transparent, but there's been no feeling that the markets have become transparent.
Is that in the options market? You could put on anonymous bids.
Well, they're done. It's easily kept anonymous.
Yeah.
You know, it's for by and large. And then there's an attempt to try to make it as transparent as possible. But it's also, remember Oliver North? He came up with his famous plausible deniability defense. You know, it's very hard to prove insider information. You know, Martha Stewart actually is remarkable that they pinned her on insider information because it's very, very difficult to prove insider information because you can say that, you know, I just had a feeling. So I put on this trade, and you can't persecute me for having a feeling.
Well, you know? That's what the market told you. If you see oil going up, you assume somebody knows something.
So it's really hard to prove it. Now, you know, what we say on this show in my tirade against Exxon is that it is kind of like insider information because if you keep destroying Earth's natural resources, it's going to have an effect eventually called global warming, climate change, flooding, and a great social disruption. You know, ecological immigration, people leaving their flooded out areas and trying to get into places like the UK. And the UK's response is to raise the walls, say the immigration is, you know, becoming a hot issue. We don't want anyone coming in here. We want ID cards. I'm sure this event will get Charles Clark to push through ID cards and say we need ID cards. And ID cards is not necessarily in the best interest of the community because it is a way for your local policeman to mimic your local governments. They can simply stop anybody at any time and harass them. Why would the local constable searching a person and on the premise that everyone has an ID card and they can be stopped by a policeman at any time, why would the local policeman act with any greater conscience than the government? The government has been shown to be an illegal warmonger. But, you know, Blair went into Iraq illegally. He started killing people illegally. They got no respect for any international law conventions at all. So your local police force isn't going to act in a different way. They're going to mimic their leaders. So now this ID law, one of the problems is that any cop can stop anybody and harass them. You end up with Clockwork Orange, you know, where the cops are the crooks. And it goes into a state of bizarro. That's one problem. The other problem, of course, is that who's pushing for this but the IT contractors, the information technology contractors, who have already put on several boondoggles in the UK health system, NHS, total breakdown. If they really wanted a beefed up ID system, they could just take the driver's license for a lot less money. Just, you know, put in a few more pieces of information. Or they should call Colin Challen, who's in the House of Commons and say that we're going to bring carbon trading to individuals. Now, Colin Challen and the Archbishop of Canterbury have a bill in the House of Commons for what they call DTQ, Domestic Trading Quotient, for carbon credits. So the individual who is not abusing carbon will get a credit every time he sells his carbon allotment to a carbon abuser, like an SUV driver, who at the end of the month, they've gone over their carbon allotment, they got to buy a carbon credit from somebody who's come in under the carbon allotment, typically a homeless person. A homeless person, because they're not abusing carbon, they're in line to get some income selling credits to Lovies and Hampstead Heath, who've gone over their credits, gone over their allotment. Now, if you take that program, which shows clear economic benefit to people in a way that creates economic balance between the classes, you marry that to an ID card or a smart card, okay, then you got something. Then you've got, you know what? Now you're attacking the true problem by closing the economic class gap that runaway corporations like Tesco have created, runaway corporations like these defense contractors have created. If you're closing the class gap and you're closing the wealth and income gap, then there's justification maybe for an ID card with a smart chip that'll bring this carbon trading as a DTQ, as it's outlined in the House of Commons website. With, you'll see the program by Colin Challen, MP, and Archbishop of Canterbury. They've got this program. But, of course, the corporations who are pushing the IT, the information technology for these ID cards, they don't really care about wealth and income gaps, even though wealth and income gaps are what cause problems like blowing up of buses, the way we see it, the truth about markets. And if they did, you know, they'd have a good program to sell. Charles Clark's not going to push that because they are a slave to GDP growth, even though it means ultimately what had happened in World War II. Death ovens. Death ovens led to GDP growth. According to Lee Raymond at Exxon, turning the world into a big global Auschwitz is good for GDP growth. Sieg Heil! Get down with your bad self! You know, but unfortunately, this is just going to be another land grab opportunity like after 9/11. After 9/11, Israel blew up more Palestinians. You know, the Patriot Act 1 and 2 went through, or Patriot Act 2, you know, going through. Big grant land grab opportunity. Change the laws. Eminent domain law.
Yep. Apparently, Blair is on his way back to London. They're canceling the G8. Poor Bob. What's he going to do now? Wasn't he going to sing like the finale song or something?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, it's a tragic event. And it's emotional. You know, we're emotional. I can see your eyes are red rimmed. You're holding back the tears because these are human beings. These are, could quite possibly be friends of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think in times of like this, it's important to keep in mind where all this comes from. And it comes from an abandonment of the democratic social contract that's been fought for hundreds of years by those who are pro-civilization. When you abandon the democratic institutions in favor of a private corporate agenda, you're opening Pandora's box in three ways, actually. Number one, the ecology starts to crack in real time. Two, the global economy, not the ecology, but the economy, starts to get lopsided in horrible ways that foster political influence peddling in places like the UK and the US at the expense of continents like Africa. And number three, I forget number three. I had three when I started. I had three. I should have written it down. But those are the two big ones anyway. 2.5, 2.2. Two big reasons. When you, it's important to keep in mind where they come from, how they originate. It's not enough just to say there's evil in the world.
Mm. Well, but also you always argue that get rid of money laundering. If you got rid of this blind options, you know, you couldn't create events like this for profit.
Yeah. You know, if there was, again, a little bit more attention paid to what's happening in, let's say, the hedge fund industry. Hedge fund industry is virtually unregulated. It's a $1 trillion industry, and it's the tail that wags the global economy. And these big trends happen because a lot of people are getting rich manipulating markets in the hedge fund industry. And, you know, again, a little regulation might be helpful there. Before we go, though, and by the way, if you want to send us... Whoa, my God, I lost my headphones.
You lost your head.
If you want to send us an email, where do they send an email to, Stacey?
thetruthaboutmarkets@gmail.com. And we'll try to answer it, maybe even read it out loud. So if you don't want your name read or anything like that, make up a new name for us, and we'll read it next week. And next week, we have a bit of a surprise. We're going to call somebody.
Yeah, we're going to call somebody.
Online.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're wrapping up the show now. This is a tragedy. It's a tragic event. And but I think we got to stay firm and understand that and be on guard for the fallout. You know, the government's going to come back at us real hard now and say they need things like ID cards and they need and all kinds of stuff, which is actually going to perpetuate the problem. Okay. The public wasn't vigilant after 9/11. They let the government, they gave them the benefit of the doubt. And as a result, the situation got much worse. You know, Iraq is a great example of that. They went in there illegally. They stirred up a hornet's nest. They've made the world less safe. Why? We let them. You know, that's you and me. And, you know, at karmabank.com, which is our website, we think we've got a way to push back in a nonviolent way. And in a way that makes more sense than having celebrity showcases at various venues and wearing plastic armbands that mean nothing. And it's a way to economically decapitalize these companies. Take away their money, take away their influence, you take away lots of the problems. So that's karmabank.com, BANQUE, is the website, karmabank.com. We were going to talk about eminent domain. We never got around to it, really. There was an excellent piece by Lionel Shriver called We Want Your House, Get Out. And she's talking about the fact that in America, she would never buy a house in America anymore because according to this new Supreme Court decision, anybody who thinks they can make more money from building where your house used to be, it's okay to do so. So it's pretty shocking, actually. And I guess we'll get into that next week. And we also didn't get into this story, which I guess we're going to cover next week, which is that... The Iraq War, according to right-wing American talk show hosts, is being won by Americans, and they believe it so heartily they're going to fly to the Green Zone in Baghdad to broadcast from the Green Zone about how America is winning the war in Iraq. So they've got the whole propaganda machine. They're going to embed it in the Green Zone with right-wing radio American talk show hosts.
And we still have a minute to try to raise money for our own flight there.
That's right. You know, if you want to raise money, send us money because we're getting a trip to the Green Zone. We're going to track down these right-wing American talk show hosts because once you're in the Green Zone, it's an international lawless zone. There's no law. So we're going to track down guys like Rush Limbaugh. We're going to take him out. I won't give you any more details on that. We're going to take him out. We're going to take him out. We're going to get rid of the competition. We're going to do a Microsoft. In Microsoft, they don't like the competition. They take him out. So here we are, talk show hosts. We don't like Rush Limbaugh. Meet me in the Green Zone, Rush. Mono a mono. Me and my Tech 9. We'll see how far you get there, Bush. Buddy, we'll see how that all works out for you. Yeah, so send us money or just send us an email to thetruthaboutmarkets@gmail.com. Anything else happening next week on the show?
We're calling that famous Nobel Peace potential prize winner.
That's right.
Week.
We got some insider information of our own. We got the phone number. We got the cell phone number from one of the big Live Aid sponsors.
For Sir Bob. We're going to...
Well,
gonna...
now the whole...
No, but we want people to tune in. We want everybody to tell everybody this big phone call is going to come.
Maybe they'll to give them the tip. They'll tip them off. Maybe.
Right. Do you think our listeners would actually befriend Bob Geldof?
He's already in Stockholm waiting to get his live Nobel Peace of the Action Award. Oh my God. Well, actually, no, they're settling in now, the big bomb blast. I'm not going to go throw up.
Okay, well, stay safe and stay off London public transport, I guess. Just tell your leader to stop being a warmonger.
Until next week, y'all. This is Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert saying bye, y'all.